Is 9 a.m. on October 17th, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta, here on Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And it's another great morning here in the studio, Elizabeth.
It sure is. It's a great morning in Atlanta, and we have two exciting guests with us here in the studio, Camille Russell Love, who is the director of the City of Atlanta's Office of Cultural Affairs, is here to tell us all about Elevate 2012. So I'm really excited to find out more about that. Good morning, Camille. And also, we have Denise Jackson with us, who is a gallery owner and a fine art consultant. She's with Emerging Art Scene. So we've got a very artsy morning today,
I know,
Dana.
That was on purpose. I love artsy people. But before we get to artsy people and before we get to Camille, I have to tell you this story about driving in, because this has been on my mind in traffic for the last little while, and I just want to share it and get you guys to weigh in. So, you know, when you're in traffic and you make a mistake, let's say you try to get over into a lane, but then the traffic stops and you're sort of stuck halfway in the wrong lane, or, you know, you're just minding your own business and someone else does something stupid. Why is it that we feel the need, as the person being wronged, to turn around and look into the other car? What is it that exactly that we think we're going to see in the other car, the person who has made the mistake? I never understood that. I do it too. It's like you want to see what that idiot looks like that has just done
sometimes
this.
Sometimes you see it's like a dog driving the car.
And then you're like, what? I did that this morning. I pulled into the wrong lane. Like, I tried to move over a lane, but then the traffic stopped and I was sort of stuck halfway into the other lane. And this guy pulls around and he swings his head, you know, like almost does like a scary movie 180 degree like head turn and nasty look on his face and looking at me, and I'm like, you know, whoops, sorry dude, you know, it was an accident. I don't know what he's expecting to see.
Like, I don't know, people don't have manners in cars like they do in person. In person, people are courteous and they let you through a door first and they let you in line first, but in when you're driving, people aren't as courteous.
It's true. It's like you're in your bubble and you don't have to, like, maybe no one will see you, so you can just be rude and obnoxious and it won't matter.
Well, I remember doing that one time, and then it was someone I knew. I was so embarrassed.
You're like giving them that nasty look, and then you're like, oh,
the nasty look, and then I go, oh, God, that's someone I know.
That is hilarious.
Well, and you know, this is a small town, and once you start to know people, you can never be too careful. That's why you should be a good driver.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, everybody makes mistakes. I always try to, when I do make the mistake, I always try to put the goofy, like, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean it face on, you know, like,
I'm not from here.
Right. I don't know. I'm sorry. But I just think it's so funny that we have to look in the other car. I have no idea what we're expecting to see. Like, one day it's going to be a three-headed monster or something. You're going to be like, oh, that makes sense. I don't know. All right.
Speaking of interesting things to look at in and around the city of Atlanta.
Nice segue. Well done.
There's going to be a lot to look out the window at and check out and explore around downtown Atlanta coming up with Elevate 2012. So, Camille, why don't you give us the scoop here?
Well, the scoop is that this is our second year with Elevate. Elevate being a downtown public art festival. It includes installations, performances, just fun. And last year it was 66 days, and we learned that that's a long time to try to keep something going. So this year we've compressed it into 10 days. We'll have an opening with a multimedia presentation down at the Carnegie Pavilion on Friday night. And next Thursday we have the Imaginary Millions. I think it's on next Thursday. The Imaginary Millions, that'll be at 200 Peachtree.
Okay.
And it's an opportunity for the general public to come in and see artists kind of performing of an auction of, if they had $1 million and there are 100 artists and they're going to each be given $10,000 in play money to auction on each other's artwork. So it'll just be an interesting way to talk about art and economy.
Interesting.
Yeah, and we're collaborating with Wonder Root, Mocha GA, and the Kennesaw State University on that,
so
Kennesaw State University Museum.
Explain a little bit more about how that works and where that concept came from.
Well, it came out of the community.
Okay.
This is not our big idea,
okay,
but it's one that we embrace because we think that the public needs to understand that there is an economy around art.
Yeah.
And good art makes for good economy, and not so good art doesn't sell. So this will be an interesting experiment in, you know, artists who see another artist's work and who want it. So there's a way that you can actually see the art ahead of time. There'll be some docent-led tours, and if you go to our website, www.ocaatlanta, you can gather all that information. And then there'll be some other, you know, public events. The thing that I'm most excited about is that we're taking a block in downtown Atlanta, South Broad Street, and we're allowing street artists from all over the world, really. We have one artist from France, Tilt, who's an internationally known, I'll call him street artist, not a graffiti artist. Hence, Alex Brewer, better known as Hence, is kind of leading the charge. But we're going to take about 7 or 8 buildings, and we're going to wrap them. Artists are going to actually paint the total facade of the building.
Wow.
And so that, along with we have an artist dance company coming from Toulouse, France.
Wow.
That'll be performing. Okay. Pierre Rigal will have some street dancers there. We'll have DJ Kemet spinning some music. We have the Atlanta Music Project, which is out of another program of the Office of Cultural Affairs, which is our after-school program, where we actually take children who are who've never been exposed to music, who don't even own instruments. They will actually be performing at the street festival on Broad next Saturday, the 27th. And then also the general public can come and paint murals if they'd like. So it'll just be a big
That'll
old street party.
Right.
So the buildings that are being wrapped, how long will that stay up once it's done?
They'll stay up until the property owner says it has to come down. Yeah. Most of those buildings are vacant.
Okay.
And so what we are hoping for, our big idea, is that maybe this will become a new cultural district. You know, it connects to Castleberry. It's isolated. There's nothing happening there now that is legal. And so we think that if we can infuse some new energy into this particular space, that it'll just change the dynamic. And that hopefully the property owners will make those spaces available so that galleries can go there, or artists can have studios there, or, you know, art-related businesses, cultural-related businesses can be there. So we're excited about Elevate being a way to kind of implement some economic development in the city and kind of change that dynamic. We did that last year with Underground.
Yeah.
We had a great time at Underground, and some of those murals that were put up temporarily have become permanent.
Very cool.
And so we think maybe these buildings that are being wrapped will also be permanent.
It's interesting about the role that public art plays in the city, both the economic aspect of the city as well as the overall culture. Having been in this role for a while, what have you seen the role of public art in Atlanta do to the culture of the city and the growth of Atlanta?
Well, you know, art is to stimulate your senses. And what I've seen over the time that I've been in the Office of Cultural Affairs is that we've used public art to enliven communities. We've used public art as a way to assist children with getting their cultural sensibilities together. We've done, you know, a summer murals program where children have worked with artists to create murals that have been installed in their neighborhoods, and those murals aren't defaced. You know, the children are very proud about the work that they've done to improve the look of their neighborhood. We've also used public art to document our history. We have a beautiful mural that documents the work of Dr. Martin Luther King that is near, it's on one of our public facilities, but it's adjacent to the King Center. And, you know, so it gives people some historical context through art. We've also put gateways in communities. We've got a beautiful piece of sculpture over in the Castleberry Hills community that really commemorates the work of the Morris Brown band director, Cleophas Johnson, but it really is a gateway into that community. And so we see public art as being, and then we've got the Living Walls annual conference, which sometimes generates controversy. But that's a good thing because it says that people are paying attention and that they are having dialogue about what art means in their community. So we think that's important. We think it's a learning experiment for Atlanta. We think that it makes Atlanta more interesting. And to that end, we have started some public art walking tours in downtown Atlanta. You can actually take your cell phone, go to a spot in downtown Atlanta where there's a piece of public art, dial a number, and learn all about it. And there are actually 14 pieces of art on that walking tour.
Wow.
Now, and we'll be doing that during Elevate as well.
Now, how do people find out about that?
Go to our website again. It's www.ocaatlanta.com. Click on the public art portion, and voila, all that information's there.
OCAAtlanta.com.
.com. Exactly.
Okay, excellent. I think it's really great. I love all the public art. I think it really does make this one of the things that I sort of generally have a problem with. I have a lot of problems, but one of them is just that when you're in certain parts of the country, everything starts to look the same. And cities are not as much like that because cities do usually have their own skyline or a little bit of their own personality. But certainly newer cities, and Atlanta, unfortunately, sometimes is viewed that way because we lost so much of our history.
Yes.
You could be on any street anywhere. And so I think sometimes having those unique art installations really does give you a flavor for where you are.
Yeah, it's great when someone says, remember, if you'll meet me at that.
Yes.
That spot. The public art is a reference. I think that's a good thing.
Now somebody told me I'm going to go off on a tangent, so pardon me. But somebody told me the other day that Buckhead was named because there used to be an actual buck head on a sign, like the head of a buck, way 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 back when, and people would say meet me at the Buckhead, mm-hmm. and it turned into Buckhead. And so then I decided that Marietta should be called, Big Chick,
the
Georgia,
big
or something like that. So maybe we'll end up with a piece of art in downtown Atlanta that will cause us to have to change the name. I don't know. It could happen.
We're very excited about being able to do this work.
Yeah.
And we're very excited about being able to change the energy in downtown Atlanta. We think Atlanta is a great city. We want to be the next great international city. And arts and culture is one of the ingredients in that formula.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to do our best job to make that happen.
Well, I like also that there's dance and other forms of, or not just fine art, not just visual art to look, as part of this Elevate Atlanta.
The other thing is that everything's free, so you can come and experience all these things for free. You can come to the Imaginary Millions Gala and it's free. Just come in creative tie. Bring enough money to buy yourself a drink and just have some fun. The public art on the streets will be free. We think that that is also important because it makes for equal access to the art. And every one of us here in this room will experience it differently, but it's available to us, and that's what we want. We want people to be affected by art even when they don't know it.
Yeah.
We want them to be in a space and go, okay, wow, I'm feeling kind of different. And I don't know why when I go home, I won't kick my dog because, I saw a piece of artwork and, it made me feel better.
Who do you hang out with?
Got an elevated point of view now.
I hang out with my grandchildren.
Hopefully they don't kick the dog, Camille.
No, we love our dogs.
All right. Just checking. Elizabeth, what else do you want to know about Elevate? I feel like I've been hogging the mic.
No, I'm interested to find out. Well, speaking of the kids, I guess, is it a kid-friendly kind of thing?
Oh, it absolutely is.
In fact, we have
children performing at the South Broad Street Festival Day on October 27th. So, and the dancing will be, dance that young people are interested in, kind of hip-hop oriented dance, and there'll be mural painting. So it absolutely is family friendly. That's one of the things that we work towards, is to make sure that everyone can come out and enjoy it.
Awesome.
Now, how is the Department of, or the Office of Cultural Affairs supported? Who are the partners that help you guys to put on these types of events?
Okay. We've got some sponsors. Most of this is funded out of our office. We've got some in-kind sponsorship. For instance, we're working at the 200 Peachtree facility, the new atrium facility, and they are partnering with us by providing some in-kind services.
Right.
But Central Atlanta Progress, Underground Atlanta, the Atlanta Downtown Neighborhood Association, the Atlanta Convention and Visitors Bureau, and France Atlanta are partners with us. And we've got some sponsors, Binders, Fallen Arrows, Creative Loafing, the Peachtree Center, and Love Your Block.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That they're all sort of interestingly art-related people that like Binders. That makes total sense.
Right.
You know, maybe everybody will come down, be a part of this, and decide they too must be an artist and go buy some art supplies.
Yeah.
It could happen.
Exactly. That happens.
Go paint a picture.
That's right. It could happen. I look at sometimes I go to, I'm sure you guys can appreciate this, I will go to a, you know, an art festival or something, and I'll go through some of the booths and I'll go, wow, that's really incredible. That's amazing. And then I'll go in other booths and I'll go, I could totally do that. You know,
do you go home and do it?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of.
There's an artist in all of us.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there really is. There is a creative spirit in all of us. And hopefully the work that we're doing helps all of us unveil it at some
absolutely.
Point in time.
Absolutely. I feel like every time you get the experience of art, whether it's walking through a gallery or just seeing a unique piece of public art out in the city. And now, you know, seems like they're popping up more and more all along the Beltline. There's
wonderful,
like random.
Yeah, the art on the Beltline is something that we work with as well. And we're excited about that being, you know, part of what's going into our landscape. All of those works are intended to be temporary, but some of them will become permanent. And it really will make the walking or the biking or the running experience on the Beltline very interesting.
Absolutely. Well, and with all the filming done here as well, like you're talking about making it even more of a unique location because
right.
each of those landmark art pieces are also really cool to have in the background.
And I'm sure we'll see that. I'm sure we will.
Scene.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of that as more and more movies and TV shows get made here. So I'm sure the artists would love that, right? Or some kids that do a mural and then it shows up in a movie. How cool is that?
It's very cool.
One of the things that I think is you know, sad maybe is that, you know, when we're kids and actually, I guess we could go on forever about this, but, you know, having art in schools, of course, in my mind is crucial. And one of the things, you know, as a kid, they're always putting a crayon in our hand or a magic marker and, you know, shut up and go draw something or, you know, you take an hour out of your day in school and you go to art class. And then as adults, we just stop doing that. And except for maybe a doodle in a really boring meeting, right? I hope nobody's doodling right now. Okay. But you know, I think getting us back into the mindset of art like that is probably the best we can do for busy working people and families that are so busy and everything. But I would love to see more adults getting, you know, a paintbrush back in their hand or a crayon or a marker. I think we'd be a much happier, sweeter, more civil place if everyone was creating art, right?
I remember that. And maybe we'll develop a program where adults can come out and touch and, you know, get in touch with their creativity.
I think that would be, and you know what? You could do all kinds of, we'll talk.
Okay.
I got all kinds of ideas. We'll talk.
Well, Camille, we're so glad that you were able to stop by today and everybody's looking forward to Elevate 2012. So let's move over now to Denise.
Shall we, or do we want to hit the headlines real quick?
Oh, yes. Dana, you're running the show.
You know what? I like to be in charge, Elizabeth. I like to boss people around.
Just tell me what to do.
Well, you know, we normally do the headlines
first. I'm at your service. Sure.
Go ahead.
But we wanted to – well, you – Denise, you're like a regular here. Bye, Camille. Thanks for coming. So you're ready to hang with us, right?
I sure am. I'm here for that.
All right. So we're going to get back to Denise and emerging art and Castleberry Hill and all of her fabulousness. But since we didn't hit the headlines, let's do that real quick. And Denise, feel free to chime in if any of these stories, you know, pique your interest or not, if they don't. All right. Elizabeth.
What's going on?
First of all, Atlanta's Pardot. Do we say it Pardot or Pardot? Pardot,
Pardot,
I'm going
to assume. I think.
Pardot, really? I was going with the French pronunciation. We should probably Google that. But anyway, Atlanta's Pardot.
I don't think they care now. They've cashed in no matter how you pronounce it.
Yeah, so it's an Atlanta company, software company, and they have been acquired by Exact Target, which is a huge company. And Pardot, Pardot, however they're called, they're getting around $100 million. For
that's
their company.
Nice.
Good. They could buy some art.
They can buy some art.
They
should buy some art. They're a, you know, marketing software, interactive marketing software. And of course, most people have heard of Exact Target, which is the
one of
emailing.
The larger, right. Email marketing. There's so many of those email marketing communications.
Correct.
Software programs now for the variety of ways that businesses keep in touch with their customers. So there's a lot of them, and they continue to kind of narrow the playing field.
Well, the other thing that's interesting about it is that ExactTarget, who are based, I think, in Indianapolis, are going to have Atlanta now be their largest operation outside of Indianapolis. They have offices in other cities as well. But
it's a good deal for Atlanta, too, because they're going to keep
it here
and grow their presence here.
It's very cool.
ATL.
And it's good for Atlanta business owners. It's good for people who are developing businesses here, seeing that that can happen.
Right, because sometimes we get the rap that, hey, we don't have as much activity, investment capital, deal flow,
right,
as the Silicon Valleys, which, yes, obviously that's true.
But also, I think sometimes people think of
occasionally.
I think sometimes people think of Atlanta, you know, entrepreneurs and startups think of Atlanta as a starting place because it's affordable to be here and there are some good things here, but they move, or they think they need to move. And we're saying, no, you can be Pardo Pardot and get bought out by ExactTarget and be right here in Atlanta. So
there you go.
Okay, moving on. Atlanta office sector rebound. We're talking about real estate. Offices, office space. There's all kinds of ways they measure this.
Right, the absorption rate, which is the standard for the industry.
It's a very weird term. Yeah. I was reading this article and I was thinking to myself, absorption, to me that means like a sponge absorbing water. I don't really understand how that...
Did the janitor come up with this?
I don't know.
I don't know.
But bottom line is, overall, the Atlanta office sector is coming back, which basically means there's a higher percentage of offices being bought
occupied,
or leased, correct,
right.
Occupied. Unfortunately, Elizabeth, our neighborhood here in downtown Atlanta is still struggling.
Yes, not as much.
Yeah, not as much. However,
not as much absorption going on.
No, it's very sad. But Buckhead actually was actually one of the worst areas for some time, and it is now way on the rebound. It's actually one of the better areas around town. So if you're looking for Buckhead office space, you better hurry up because the prices are going to start
Absolutely.
To go up.
But you might be able to get a good deal downtown.
You will be able to get, in fact, you will be able to get a good deal downtown.
So go get a good deal
downtown. And we actually know some people. So if you want to, you know, check, you know, give us an email
right,
or
we'll
whatever,
hook you up.
Dana@businessradiox.com. I will connect you with some people who can hook you up with Atlanta real estate. And I'm not getting a commission. I just want you to know. Okay. Carter's, the baby clothes. Anybody who's had kids or has been a kid remembers wearing Carter's or putting their kids in Carter's. They are bringing 200 new jobs to Atlanta. They're consolidating their retail store, IT and financial operations in Shelton, Connecticut with the Atlanta headquarters. And that's going to happen by the end of next year. It's going to cost them quite a pretty penny, but I guess they feel like it's worth it to be here.
Apparently,
in
that's
Fablanta.
Where they want
to
be, right.
$35 to $40 million cost for the move. And they do, by the way, already have 1,200 employees here. Now, you know what this got me thinking about when I read this story? I started thinking that when companies move people like here, you know, that it almost, they should, I don't know why I'm wanting all adult things to go back to kid things, but I was thinking that they should have like host families, you know, for the families that have to move here because, you know, their jobs just got moved here.
Right.
That they should have like host families like you did when you went on high school, like when you went abroad.
Hospitality.
Yeah.
Crew.
Yeah. Like. That like a host family that you could come and stay with while you look for a new place to live, and they would like take you to dinner and maybe like buy you a present.
That is so Southern hospitality of you.
I know.
I am not sure what happened to the Philadelphia girl.
I know. I got nice for a second. I don't know why that happened either.
No, but that's great. And Carter's also is looking at moving to Buckhead. Did you see that too? Along with the Buckhead commercial real estate trend. They've got their headquarters in Midtown right now, but they're
going to
move
on
up. Peachtree. Is that
moving up?
Peachtree? Well, it
yeah,
is
it
north.
Is up. It
yes.
is up, yeah. And it's interesting because I think
according to the compass.
I think that's one of those things that, yeah, exactly. I think that's one of those things that happens when an area starts to get buzz, then everybody wants to be where the buzz is, right?
Right. That's interesting, too, after Buckhead's kind of been a little stagnant.
Yeah.
It seems like with the streets of Buckhead sitting like it's
very
does.
Stagnant.
So.
Yep. And so now it looks like, at least from an office space perspective. Well, and I want to say, and I could be wrong about this, Denise, but I think part of the reason that that may be happening in terms of the office space is because the Buckhead, streets of Buckhead is starting to to move
Correct.
Again.
That's what we hear. Right.
Right. We're hearing that we're, you know, seeing a little bit of movement, and we're hearing that it's going to pick back up and development's going to continue. And so I think people are like, let's get in
right.
now.
They want to get in a little ahead of the trend.
Correct. Yes. Correct. Well, so we might be losing Carter's out of Midtown, Elizabeth, but we will be getting a 1920s style nightclub in Midtown. So that should be interesting. And when I say 1920s style, first of all, it's going to be in the Midtown Promenade, which to me, that's more Virginia Highlands-y than Midtown, but just because it's on the other side of Piedmont Park, but it's kind of over there near where the movie theater is and all of that.
Right.
But
Trader Joe's.
Exactly.
So they're going to put a club over
the
there?
High school,
yes.
In the shopping center?
Yes. Hmm. There's already, it's taking the place of a bar that was already there, I think. But they are really talking about live music 3 to 5 nights a week. It's an 8,000 square foot space. They're talking about, you know, not just the look of the place, but actually the style of what goes on in there with, you know, sort of flappers and songstresses. And they're going to be showing like, black and white movies. And I want to
so
be a songstress.
Are you going to dress up like a flapper?
I so totally am.
Go down there?
That's what would be the appeal. People might like dressing up like that.
Although then you might get all the freaks flying their freak flags over there. I'm just saying. I don't know. The people that spend a lot of time dressing up as something on a regular basis, they scare me a little bit.
Hey, with Halloween right on the horizon,
scares
how can
me.
You even say that?
Scared. Very, very scared. I mean, I like the idea of it, but the reality is that I probably wouldn't spend the time doing the dressing up. You look like somebody who might dress up, Denise.
Well,
do you
no,
dress
it's
up?
It's a lot of pressure to have to dress up
See?
And do these things.
Yes.
It really is. To pull it all together, it takes time. But yes, sometimes it's expected, but it's a lot of work.
And now here's where I should be all about this, right? Because I want adults to act like kids. So I should
right.
be all about this.
Dress up.
Yes, play right. dress up. But when I think about the people that dress up to go to the Star Wars movies and the Hunger Games and Harry Potter, I'm a little concerned for them, I have to say. So we'll see what happens. This should be a different thing,
so,
hopefully.
Well, that's why you have to create these kinds of bars. So all the people that have this secret fantasy of being a flapper have a place to go. And it's okay. It's normal.
That's true. Now, I will say this. I hope it's a dressy bar because I actually think that would be kind of fun. And I think you could dress without dressing for something like this. Like you could just wear a black cocktail dress.
Put a lot of pearls on. Something
right.
Like
pearls.
That.
Elizabeth, you have pearls. You know, long pearls, a black dress, you know, maybe a little sequin here or there. I think you could do that pretty easily. All right. We won't get crazy about it, but we'll... We'll wait and see what happens, and maybe they'll invite the three of us to the opening, and then we can...
Yes.
Okay. All right. We can wear our pearls.
To the Charleston.
That's right. We can do the Charleston. Okay. Moving from Gatsby-style bars to the grocery store. No segue there at all. I got nothing. Publix is now offering free Wi-Fi to its shoppers. And yes, Denise is making a face.
Right.
And I did too. And that is why I brought this story in, because I was thinking, huh?
Really? I was excited.
Well, I read the story and I got it once I read the story. But when I first read the headline, I thought, well, that is sort of unnecessary. But what they're saying is, you know, if you need to look up a recipe, if you, you know, forgot an ingredient you need for something or your shopping list or whatever else, sometimes there's spotty cell phone coverage in the grocery store and you can get frustrated because you can't get your stuff. Well, now you can just click over to the free Wi-Fi and literally it's just going to be called Publix, they've said. And you just find that on your little Wi-Fi thing and bam, you can get your grocery list.
Okay. Well, I think the explanation helps because otherwise you kind of just keep moving through the grocery store. You don't really need Wi-Fi.
I agree. That, although I will say some Publixes, is that how you say the plural of Publix? Some Publixes have little cafes too. So you may end up getting a few people who are sitting there during lunch or whatever eating their delicious Publix sub. And I'm
right.
not getting paid
Deli
by them
fresh.
Either. That's right. They're not paying us. But... you know, you might sit there and eat your sandwich and get on your Wi-Fi. So
always good to have Wi-Fi.
And here is the thing that it also brought up for me. Places that charge for Wi-Fi need to be smacked. And I'm talking about all places.
Right, because they should just be happy that you're there.
Thank you. Hotels, tune in, please.
And airports sometimes.
Stop.
You have to pay.
Right. Stop. Stop it already. Like, this is one of those things that just is, come on, it's free. It's going to be free. It needs to be free. People have
if you're a location-based business and people are near your location because of some peripheral benefit that you're offering, that's a good thing.
Right.
They're
gonna
definitely
choose...
going to exponentially increase the likelihood that they will at some point drop some cash
in
at
your
business
place.
Establishment.
Right. Right. This is the thing that hotels are the number one. Sometimes I love the hotel business. I have a connection to the hotel business. I feel you know, great love for hotels and hospitality in general. But if you don't give me free Wi-Fi in your hotel, I'm going somewhere else to get coffee and get on my computer. If you give me the free Wi-Fi, I might stay and pay you for coffee, you know, or I might come back and stay in your hotel again instead of looking for a different hotel next time I come to that city, because it's just stop already. So go Public's leading the charge with the free Wi-Fi. That's all I'm saying. Moving on. The stories are getting, I purposely organized the stories this week from the more serious to the wacky. So we're going to end up with the wackiest, but we don't get political very often here. But Pizza Hut, did you guys hear about what Pizza Hut did with the whole presidential debate thing?
This was an odd PR stunt.
So apparently
ill thought out. I would even go that far to say.
I don't know where they put this, if it was on their website or where, how it got started. But apparently Pizza Hut threw out a challenge saying that they would provide free pizza for 30 years to anyone who would ask either President Obama or Mitt Romney during the presidential debate whether or not they preferred sausage or pepperoni on their pizza. And then they got a lot of pushback, shockingly. A lot of people saying, WTF, and they said, never mind. So they pulled back on that stunt.
Well, I think it was a clever idea in that it would be a cute gimmick to ask and to somehow publicize that and bring light to that from a Pizza Hut publicity aspect. But they could have just like called their PR people and pitched it to that. Like, why saying that they should do it in the middle of the presidential debate?
Right.
And I mean, you should have some.
Why not have a commercial?
Joe where, idiot on the street who's going to raise their hand to volunteer
it.
To do this stupid stunt.
Right.
And then everyone in the world's going to have to watch it.
No.
I don't like things like.
Well, it just totally cheapens the presidential debate, which.
Right.
Well, we don't need to have people thinking America is more
crazy than we are.
Well, do you think they did it just to get people saying the word Pizza Hut? I haven't said the word Pizza Hut in 15 years. So it's got us thinking about Pizza Hut.
Well, that's right. And that may be why Chick-fil-A decided to do the whole anti-gay thing too. So we'd all talk about Chick-fil-A. I don't know. Maybe they all got together at the fast food convention and said, how can we get people talking? That's right. I don't know. I can just imagine. I mean, it seems to me it would have been a much smarter plan for Pizza Hut to just do a commercial in which they had maybe like two empty podiums or, you know, the backs of heads of politicians and not said who they were and just said, had somebody raising their hand saying, do you prefer sausage or pepperoni? Done and done. Moving on. Okay.
Thank you, Dana.
My pleasure. Here's my favorite story of the day before we get to Denise and we get serious again. It's not serious, but we get artsy again. Okay, Denise and Elizabeth, did you know that 30% of employees who call in sick are lying?
I think it sounded a little low.
I did too.
Right.
I think it might be more like 50%, but this is from a survey. People lie on those too. You know, if you ever watch the show House, people lie.
And who's to say what is sick?
Exactly. I mean, that is a very...
I'm having a mental illness day.
Your head could hurt a little.
The classic definition of, I guess, what those days were originally created for way long time ago. You know, we now live in a very different world where...
I feel sick right now.
That could be a broader...
I'm calling in. Let me give you some of the reasons, because this is the best part of the story, that people actually gave. You're going to love these. When they called in. These are some of the actual excuses. One guy said his sobriety tool would not allow the car to start. Another guy or gal said they forgot that they had been hired for the job at all.
That was good.
I love that.
Celebration cocktail gone awry.
Right. Oops-a-daisy. One person said her dog was having a nervous breakdown. And,
of course.
And that actually would, you know, that would make me sad and sick. And you have to go to the vet. You're at a doctor. I mean, you know. Someone said their grandmother was being exhumed for a police investigation. Their dead grandmother. Not their alive grandmother. One employee called and said their toe was stuck in the faucet. Now, how they got to the phone while their toe was in the faucet in the bathtub, I'm not sure. And let's assume it was the bathtub, because if it was the sink or something, it'd be very strange. One employee said a bird bit her, a bird, and therefore she had to stay home. Someone else was upset after watching the Hunger Games. Do you think they were wearing a costume when they wore when they watch the Hunger Games? I don't know. One employee, and I love this as a former bookstore owner, got sick from reading too much. Too much reading. I'm assuming that means they stayed up all night and that is why they were sick, not the actual reading that caused the sickness. I don't know.
And
as women, we can all appreciate this. One employee said her hair turned orange from dyeing it at home, and therefore she could not come into work. Now, 29% of employers...
So, but these were the people that, like, didn't lie, because... They said this.
Well, but
they didn't say I'm sick.
Or it
sick.
Was just a really creative lie. Like, you know.
My bird bit me.
Right.
Like, that's not I'm sick.
Right.
That's my bird bit me.
Right. I can't come in. That's true.
So
maybe the lies are just I'm sick. Right. And then people go like, that's another thing we always, don't you love when you think about calling in sick and you think like, do I need to change my voice?
Right. You make a weak voice.
Right. I'm sorry, I can't come in. Or you cough or you try to sound like you're stuffed up, like you don't talk through your nose. You call it. You go like, I'm so sorry. I just can't come in. I'm really not feeling well.
But the survey also said here that 29% of employers check to verify that an illness is legitimate, like by requiring a doctor's note or calling the employee later in the day, or some of them even said that they drive by the employee's house.
Yeah, now that's which creepy.
Kind of reminded me of like a Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
Or be careful of
situation.
Be careful of your Facebook too.
Yeah.
You know, don't put that you're, you know, having a beautiful, wonderful day and out playing.
Yeah,
enjoying the Cubs game.
That brings up a whole other topic. But yes, 14% of driving by the house is a little creepy. Like if you as a business owner don't have something better to do than drive by your employee's house, you really need to rethink the whole thing. I think.
Strategy planning session later.
Or just fire that person. If you're really that suspicious, just move on. Get rid of them and move on because that's ridiculous. 17% of employers have fired people for giving a fake excuse. So if you call and say your bird bit you, you better have bird bite marks on you because otherwise you could be fired. And of course, 31% of employers said they did notice an uptick in sick days around the winter holidays. December, therefore, being the most popular month to call in sick. So basically, don't tune into Business Radio X during December because we'll be calling in sick. That's it for the headlines, Elizabeth.
So,
should we move on to Denise? So, Denise, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be back.
Thank you for hanging out with us all this morning.
Yes, it's been fun.
Through all the craziness.
I was glad to meet Camille.
Yeah, well, I thought it would be fun to have some artsy people in here together. I wish she could have stayed with us longer, but, you know, busy woman. She's got things to do.
Denise, I want to find out about your background because you're a businesswoman and now you're in the art scene. And a lot of people don't necessarily think those go together. But obviously, Correct. Dana and I disagree with that because we're having our business radio show about art. So
that's true.
How did your career evolve such that this is currently what you're working in?
Well, I was originally in banking for many years, and I did really everything there was to do in banking on the retail side. I was a financial consultant. I was a branch manager, private banking officer. Last thing I was doing was mortgages. And we know how that was going. So that was starting to really kind of go downhill. And at the same time, I was thinking about doing something more creative. And banking did allow me to do a lot of work in the community. It was building relationships. So I was getting out and doing a lot of work civically, very involved in Chamber of Commerce's on board of directors. But I also chaired galas. I put together silent auctions for fundraisers. I chaired a business expo. So I was getting some experience along those lines as well. And I was going to a lot of galleries, and I loved going, but a lot of times I couldn't get people to go with me. They thought it might be stuffy. They didn't really want to go. So I kept thinking there could be another way to do things, and I was envisioning doing something really lively with art, and I was meeting artists who said they weren't showing their work that much, and so I started formulating some ideas. And all about the same time, the mortgage business is just going down. And we walked into work end of 2007. I was with a large company, and there was a security guard there. And he said, put everything in a box. And they laid off 2,000 people in one day.
Wow.
So that seemed like a good time to say, well, let me try out some of these ideas.
Those are not good days.
Well, it was... Just, I don't know.
That's what was going on, right?
It was December 20th, and we knew it was coming. Home Bank had already laid off a lot of people, and I kept telling people in my office, you know, We'll probably be okay till January because they're not going to do anything during the holidays.
Oops.
But December 20th.
Well, you know, though, I love that that sort of is what set you off on a creative path, because I think some of the best success stories in the world start with something like that. You know, I got laid off, you know, something bad happened, whatever it was.
Right.
And that caused me to take a look at what I was doing and reevaluate and say, you know what, now I'm going to do what I really want to do.
Yeah, it's a catalyst. You wouldn't maybe do it or not do it as full-fledged if I hadn't had that happen. And a lot of things I had done prepared me for what I was going to be doing, but I really, you know, a few years out, I would never have known I had would have gone this far and in this direction, but I just started doing things. And I hired a business consultant and talked to her for a few sessions. And I don't know how helpful that was other than I had spent some money. And so I needed to get some things done since I was paying her. And
right.
And
held yourself accountable.
Right.
Because you had invested in
yes.
yourself and the business.
I was looking for someone to, because I was trying to do something outside of the box to mentor with or apprentice with. I really didn't know a lot about the industry I was going into at all. And I couldn't find anyone doing what I was doing or wanted to do specifically. So the advice I kind of was getting was just do something. Just get started and do something. So I just kind of jumped in and started doing things. And I do find some correlation between what I did in the past. People think banking and art are so far apart. But they're all about building relationships and also about trust. Artists have to trust me, and also clients have to trust me that I'm leading them in the right direction. And it's also some confidentiality that you find in both. So there's a lot of crossover.
I think that's, I think we should, you know, take a pause and really think about that advice that you got, because I think that's great advice. And I've certainly been given the same advice, and I've turned around and shared that with other people. So let's just highlight that for the listeners. If you're trying to change careers, and I think for women, maybe more than men, and I don't know why I'm saying that, but I just feel like men maybe are maybe more afraid than women. I don't know if that's what it is or if they're just more clear on what they want from the beginning and they pick something and they stick to it. I don't know what it is, but I know a lot of women in my life go through career changes pretty frequently. And I think that's great advice. Jump in and do something. Because if you sit around and think about it, and don't necessarily wait for that catalyst, not everyone's going to get that catalyst,
true.
Right? So as you said, if you had not had that, and I know that that's true for me in my life as well, then you just maybe do something a little bit half-assed. You do it a little bit on the side. You dip your toe, your pinky toe in the water, but you don't really go for it. I think dive in and,
right.
and do something.
I had to make it work. I mean, I was dependent on making it work, so... And I found ways to make it work. You'd start one direction and maybe you'd then veer a little another way. And it was also, I didn't set out and say, I want to work for myself. What can I do that would set me up into a different field? I really followed something that interests me first.
Right.
And this is something I want to do. I have a reason I want to do it. And I can envision what I want to do. So I saw something I wanted to do.
Right.
And then I created a business around that.
Yeah. I think that's really important. You could be a little business coach on the side. Just saying.
Okay.
All right.
Now, your first gallery opened in a loft in the stacks at the Fulton Cotton Mills. That was in 2009.
Yes, correct.
And then you moved to Castleberry Point in 2010.
Yes.
So what motivated you to pick those areas and then move in those directions?
Well, originally I didn't have a gallery when I jumped in, and I was doing art events in non-traditional venues. So I would find a spot, pop-up galleries or shows, initially in restaurants and furniture stores and things like that. But I had relationships with realtors because of my background in banking. So I had actually a good connection with a marketing manager at the condo store. So I started doing art events in condo and loft properties that were for sale, which was a lot of fun. People really enjoyed those. They'd come in, I'd have art installed all in one empty unit, and then the model would be open as well. So people could see design, architecture, a cool new place, and art. So people loved those. And over time, there was kind of a demand for those, both with my database who liked to come, and also the developers liked it. It was good marketing for them. It brought people through their doors. So that led to an invitation to come into a space in the stacks. And so I was there a year, and it was a gorgeous space. The stacks are the old Fulton Cotton Mills. in Cabbage Town, and they're gorgeous. I had a 25, it had 25 feet ceilings, just a beautiful space, and I had it installed with art. I was there a year, and so I did a lot of events and openings that people loved, but it was a little bit of a challenge because it was residential. I was an exception being there, so to get people through the gated community was a little challenging, but it was a great experience. It was a great starter gallery for me. And then I had done several projects for the developer over in Castleberry Point. I did an art event in a property he had near City Hall East initially. And then I did a couple kind of art fairs over in Castleberry Point. It's a big development. It was built in 2007.
Right.
And it's got a courtyard in the center. So I would do art fairs and things in there. So I had a relationship with this developer. I knew Castleberry Hill was a strong art district. And then a retail space with a storefront became available, and so I moved over there.
And how has that been? Are you enjoying being over there?
I really have. I've been there 2.5 years now, which is hard to believe, and it's a gorgeous space. I'm on a beautiful street, tree-lined street. People are surprised when they come there. It's definitely downtown near the Georgia Dome, CNN area, and it's a good way for people to do downtown. Other than, you know, underground or some of the typical things people think.
Right, because it has like a main retail district area and then residential, but you're still in the city.
Correct, yes. A lot of buildings converted to lofts. There are some restaurants and there's some really wonderful galleries down there. We do a big art walk, art stroll.
Right, that's a regular event.
It is.
Right?
It's the second Friday of every month. So that's the biggest draw as far as the art community is people coming down to this art stroll.
And so tell me a little bit more about that because it's one of those things that's been on my list to do for months. I've been meaning to get down there. Every time it comes up, I'm actually on your mailing list.
I know. I was going to say, you must be on my list now, so I'm surprised you haven't come.
I am. And every week, every time I see it, I'm like, this is the time I'm going to go. And then for whatever reason, I get distracted. Something else is going on, and I haven't been yet. So tell me a little bit about what goes on at the Art Stroll.
It's a lot of fun. It's the second Friday of every month from 7 to 10, and it's always different. You never know exactly what you're going to get, but the galleries open, and I change my exhibit out every month, so there'll be something new to come every time you come. And I try to change it a good bit from one to the other, so it will be a whole new show each time. And then there's also other things going on. There's some pop-up galleries here and there. There's a wine shoe that does a wine tasting, wine store, but it's called Wine Shoe. They do a wine tasting. The local salons will have art in them, and they'll do, you know, hand massages or something. One of the cool things that happens, especially in the warmer months, is one of our local pubs, Elliott Street Pub, at the end of the night at 10 to about midnight, does an iron pour where these guys get out there with huge fires and they melt iron.
Oh, wow.
And you can get a small tile and etch it out, and then they pour the iron in and make a mold.
Cool.
So you can make your own, and then, you know, there's sparks flying, and it's really fun. So there's people on the streets, and it's a lively time.
Sounds great. Is there parking?
Well, actually, we are really lucky. We have free parking all in the area. So if you find parking on my street, it's free parking. There is a parking deck with retail parking. If you come during the day, in the evening, sometimes the deck's closed. It depends, but I've never had anyone say they couldn't find parking.
Okay, because that's always one of the things in older neighborhoods and things that becomes a challenge. Like when there's an art festival, you know,
yes.
Virginia Highlands Art Festival or something. Yes. It's sort of like, where do I put
my
car?
The only time I would say we've had where they recommend people take shuttles in or cabs in is we do have the one huge event, which we just had, which is Flux. And Flux attracts thousands and thousands of people. So that one's a little different.
And what is that one?
Flux, we just had. And it was, I think, October 6th. It's once a year. And we're probably in about our fifth or sixth year of Flux. But it's a lot of installation art, outdoor video projections, performance art, parades, street art, and all kinds of projects going on. It's from about 8 till past midnight. And it attracts thousands of people. It's a very, very cool art show.
But that one you have to plan ahead a little bit in terms of getting over there.
Yes. That one they actually have a shuttle set up from the Georgia Dome.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yes.
Problem solved.
They make it convenient.
Excellent.
Yes.
So, Denise, as an art consultant, you provide art consulting services with clients. Tell me about how that works.
Yes, that's
when you're meeting with a client. And
that's one of the things I really love to do because that's the time when you know someone's ready to purchase art. I love to show art to everyone. I love everyone to come through my doors, but not everyone's, you know, at the market for a piece of art at that moment. But But I do offer my services to people to come in and look at their space, get an idea of where they have empty walls, if they're starting from scratch or if they have specific projects. And I can kind of get an idea on their taste and the colors they like and the things that they like, and then work with them on finding great options of art that they want to live with.
So is the art as an investment also an important factor, or is it more about the aesthetics?
It's really more about the aesthetics and what people want to live with and what they want to show off in their home and things that appeal to them and just, you know, their whole image and their whole home and what they're living with. And I also do it in corporate environments and offices as well, because that's a really important, the impression you make when you walk into an office or corporate environment. Art can be an investment. It is an investment in that artwork's always going to go up in value if it's good art. Just people's time is worth more. You know, over time, pieces of art will go up in value. But as far as the stronger investments with living artists, it's a little harder to tell, you know, what's going to happen unless you're super top of the market. So I recommend people buy art that they love and that they know is quality art. There may be potential for some investment in it.
But. So one of the things that I think comes up for people when they're buying art, if they're not used to it, is, you know, well, why would I pay $1,000 for that? You know, it's this size thing, it's small or whatever it is. I think they don't understand the value. They don't understand what goes into making a piece of art. Or they're looking for that investment and they're thinking, well, how do I know if this is a good investment?
Well, to be honest, if you're buying the $8,000 piece or the $80,000 piece, it is more likely to be an investment than if you're buying the $300 piece. Because
right.
What's the chance that the artist who painted the $300 piece is going to turn out to be brilliant and have this huge career? I mean, it could happen, but
right. It's like investing in a penny stock versus
a
blue chip.
It's not as likely. So, you know, the art that's valued at these higher prices, this person has a talent that's been recognized. And it's also not just that moment in time that it took them so many hours to create it. It's also their whole training and, you know, how they've evolved to get to that point. And once they are able to sell at that price, you know, people with a lot of professionalism in this field have valued them to get them to that level.
It's funny because I was at a gallery opening not too long ago, and I was with my beau, and he's not really an experienced art buyer. I buy art, and I've been buying original art probably since my early 20s, and I go with your philosophy. Right. I just buy what I like. I don't really care what if it's an investment or not. And as it turns out, I do think I actually have a couple of things that
will increase
in value, but it was because I like them. And then I also have no idea what some of it's worth. But the point I sort of can make it, I've looked enough that I can sort of look at something and go like, yeah, that's, I'd pay that for that piece. And I'm not talking about the really expensive stuff. I'm talking about the stuff probably from that $300 range to maybe just over $1,000, somewhere in that ballpark. And I sort of know, well, yes, I would pay $1,000 for that, but not for that. Mm-hmm. But the reason for me is sometimes just whether or not I like it or
correct.
The subject matter, or, you know, I don't really want, for me, a painting of horses or sailboats or something is not really what I like. And so I was trying to explain this to him, but he wasn't with me. So do you find that some people are just don't get it?
Some people don't. I think it takes exposure. It takes the more time you go to galleries. A lot of people, I hear that often. I don't understand art. I don't know much about art, and they're a little bit embarrassed or shy to talk about it. So that's part of my role, is to make people comfortable in. People know what they like. They may think they don't know anything about art, but they know what they like. Someone will come in the gallery, and I have a main show that may just be one artist, but I have other sections of the gallery with other artists. And people will say, I like this piece. And then they'll walk somewhere else and they say, and I like this piece. Well, it's the same artist.
Right.
People know what they like.
Right.
And so I think if people go with that and start trusting their own eye, and then the more you look, the more you do start to recognize a little better quality maybe
right.
in what you like. But yes, people have distinct things they like from wherever that pulls out of their recesses of their mind.
The other thing, I don't know how you feel about this, Elizabeth, but I have got advice somewhere very early on in my life, probably in my 20s, from a friend who was a couple years older and had bought art and antiques and all kinds of things. She was an attorney, so she could afford stuff like that. And she said, you don't worry about it matching. You don't worry about it going, whatever it is, piece of furniture, piece of art, you buy what you like and it will work.
Correct. Yes. Art really doesn't have to be matchy. And
it shouldn't be, really.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you might have a problem if everything in
I
your house.
I bought this painting because it brought out the color like, in the couch. In,
yeah, that's not yes. what yeah. you want to do. Yeah.
You want something that's going to last longer than the couch.
And it's amazing the difference original art will make in a space. I have gone in where people will hire a designer, but they don't put money into the art, and they just bought kind of no-name art from wherever. And it maybe was not, original art. And then you bring in original art, and it just really, it just makes the whole place look richer and just... It just brings out the whole
Now,
place.
I really like to buy original art also as gifts for people, but because it is such a personal thing, I mean, you work one-on-one with people. Do you ever work with people that are buying
yes,
a gift?
Yes, and it, yeah, that happens often,
help?
Especially toward the holidays. But yes, and I think it's a wonderful idea in that it makes a lot of people happy. It makes the person that is receiving the gift happy because you got something thoughtful that you it's different. It's not something that they'll remember it. They'll have it forever. It makes an artist happy somewhere. It supports the arts. It supports the community. It makes the gallery happy, and it makes you feel good that you came up with this original gift. The funniest thing to me is I have this one artist that does birds and horses, and they're beautiful. They have silver leaf in them. People really like them. The colors are a little bit earthy, and I've had two different guys buy them and say little sets of birds, saying they're giving them to their father, and that just is. I think it's really cool. I don't know what appeals to these people thinking about their father, but I've had that happen with these birds.
Interesting. So. Yeah, I think there are, I think maybe I'm wrong, but I think part of it is like anything else. If you go and you expose yourself, so to speak, to art on a more regular basis, if you go to openings, if you go to art strolls, if you go into galleries, you start to learn. Right. You start to, as you said, see quality. You start to, and things do evoke another particular person. That's how I am when I'm just in the mall. I see something and I say, oh, my mom would love that. And you can do that, I think, in a gallery as well. The more you go.
And I think that's something that people who don't go to galleries or have not gone yet don't realize. But going to gallery openings and exhibitions is really fun. And for me, it's important that people want to buy art. But even if you don't, it is a great time. It's an icebreaker to talk to the person next to you about the piece of art. Or you can just enjoy the moment looking and reflecting. But it is – it's something different to do. It's always – you're always going to find something new. And it's a lot of possibilities.
And you know what, Denise? I think that's a great point as we get ready to wrap up, though. As a gallery owner – you want people to come, whether they're going to buy something or not, right? Because the more
Correct.
People there, that creates buzz and, it makes it interesting
yes.
for the people that might want to buy something.
It gets people excited about the art and about the artist. And then you never know. They may know someone who's, opening in an office and needs art. And they're like, wait a minute, I know that gallery or that girl that can help you.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good point, because I think maybe that is another thing that keeps people away, that maybe they're afraid, well, I can't afford that. I'm not going to go because I don't want to be pressured into buying something. Well, that doesn't happen. And certainly not at Denise's gallery.
No, not at all. And the openings, there's a lot of people. So you can get lost in the crowd. You don't have – there's no pressure at all.
So what are the events that we can look forward to or reasons to stop by the gallery?
Right now, I would love to invite people to come by. I'm open Wednesday through Saturday afternoons besides the openings. And also by appointment if people contact me. My website's emergingartscene.com, and they can contact me through that. Right now I have a really cool exhibit. It's based on Pablo Neruda. On his 20 love poems. So if you like literature as well as art, it's a great show. It's beautiful. One of the local artists I work with, David Swan, has done mixed media with digital photography. There's text from the poems, really gorgeous art. And I've got shows lined up for the next few months. A really cool project I'm working on for spring, early March, we're bringing a Spanish artist over. I might have mentioned him before, but he was friends with Salvador Dali and took photographs of Dali and also rock stars from the 70s and 80s. He has a rock and roll magazine. He's coming from Barcelona.
Very
so
cool.
We're doing a really cool exhibit at the W downtown. So I still do things outside of my gallery as well. Also working with a sculptor in Atlanta, and we'll do something really exciting with a series he's doing in the spring, late spring. He's done Hugh Hefner in the Playboy Mansion. They flew him to Amsterdam to do Van Gogh for the Van Gogh Museum. He did Ray Charles with the whole piano. So he's done some great projects. He's doing some smaller dream series pieces, which would be more tabletop size and that anyone can buy. So that'll be coming up in the spring. So I've got some exciting projects.
And the website one more time?
EmergingArtScene.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Denise, for being with us. And of course, to Camille, who was here earlier. And as always, we want to thank our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta, which you can learn more about by visiting their website, which is WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to Good Morning Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more at AtlantaDowntown.com. We'll talk to you next week.
See you then.